Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, I debunk the vaccine mandate argument, the U.S. government sending money over to the Taliban, about $64 million. General Milley is now found in bed with the Chinese Communist Party. Some very, very troubling information that has just recently come out about him. Socialist propaganda at liberal award events. That one's interesting. I'll talk about that later. And new inflation numbers and the Democrats' tax proposal. Folks, thank you for tuning in. I had to start with that clip. That one was tremendous. So what you got is just a visual for those that are listening on podcast. This was the 9/11 event, memorial event. You had the past three administrations, or, you know, without Trump, I guess you would say the past four without Trump being there. The Clintons, those are the people that were recording were calling them murderers. And you had Obama, and then you had Joe Biden walk up to a bunch of kids, act all creepy. They called him a mutt, which is kind of like a term. It's like a New Yorker thing. It's like calling somebody a scumbag or something like that. It's like it's a real insult. But called him a mutt, then said that he screwed up in Afghanistan, which is true. And then you have other people that are standing there kind of defending Joe Biden, like, well, this isn't the place. I mean, at this point, you got 13 people dead in Afghanistan. Now you have thousands of green card holders over there as well that are Americans, and then you also have 100 people right now. They're saying their estimate right now is 100 people are trying to get back into the country. Then you have Joe Biden, just the way in which he handled the memorial event for those 13 military members that died. He was looking at his watch the whole time. I mean, at this, how to what point, to what end does it have to get where it's justified to criticize the politician? That's really what my question is. But yeah, this video is hilarious. Classic New York. Terrible. You're terrible. So I want to start off with some of this COVID vax stuff. New York hospital is pausing baby deliveries right now after staffers quit over vaccine mandate. So this vaccine mandate's not going to work. I don't think there's any legal precedent for it. I think it's going to get shot down personally. I think it's just another way to drag it out, though, and a big power push on the people, as well as a shifting of the narrative from Afghanistan and trying to shift it to COVID vax mandate. So now the public discourse is about, are COVID vaccine mandates pushed from the federal government head down on employers? Is that something that's justified? Is that legitimate? And really, at the end of the day, no one's opinions are going to be changed on this. People that are authoritarians, like the Democrat Party, people like the liberals, the far leftists that are authoritarians, it's not going to change their opinion no matter what type of debate you have with them. People that have not been vaccinated, for them, I would say probably 99.99% of them choose not to be vaccinated. I bet you there's a really small percentage that haven't been able to somehow get there to get a vaccine. But I would say at this point, it's pretty fair to say that whoever has been vaccinated wanted to be vaccinated, and whoever has not been didn't want to and didn't have any intentions to do so. And I think that there's actually going to be a doubling down if they try to come down with any type of mandate. I really do think that there's going to be a lot of people, the more government pushes something on them that they know is illegitimate, unjustified, and unconstitutional, and the government has no power to do so, they will continue to resist government tyranny and government power. So, I have these Republicans, speaking of that, Washington Examiner piece written by Sarah Westwood. Republicans will have a legal battle over vax mandates. So, I got some Republican governors, state officials are preparing for a legal battle with the Biden administration over a mask mandate. They say that the federal government has no authority to issue, but that its supporters say has precedent in immunization requirements for attending schools, joining the military, and other contexts. So, yes, they're going to try to compare this, and this is what, what's her name? Leanna Wen. I'm going to have a clip of her later. What they do is they'll compare what the current precedent is. So, yeah, to go to most schools, depending on what your jurisdiction, what your state is, what your state education system says, there is a vaccine requirement, immunization requirement. Now, these are requirements of vaccines that have been around for a very, very long time. There is a precedent for them being effective and having no substantial negative long-term effects on people, or short-term, obviously. So they are something that's actually proven. Now, we're talking about vaccines take years usually to produce. This one was manufactured within a year. And now we're going to push immunization, and we're going to somehow act as if it's a one-size-fits-all, as if some sort of experimental vaccination with a whole new different system of dispersing the vaccine with this mRNA rather than the traditional virus that it shoots in you, like a weak virus that your body creates an immunological response. Instead, we have this mRNA with these weird shock proteins. It's a lot of really confusing stuff that's going on, some high tech, just new experimental stuff that we have going on, right? And we're going to somehow equate that to years ago and vaccines that have been proven for over 50 years. We're going to somehow say they're all on the same equal playing field. That's the first thing. Second thing is, yeah, there's never been a vaccination that came out this quickly, was pounded straight down everybody's throats. And there's no precedent. This has never happened before. So when they say there's a legal precedent, there isn't. And then there also, if you look at, if you're talking about rubella, mumps, I think chickenpox might be one of them. The other one is polio. The lethality of all of those for young children is way higher. It's astronomical. It's not even comparable to how lethal COVID is for young children. Young children, their immunological response is actually more effective than the vaccine numbers. Now, the flu is more deadly to children than COVID. Therefore, that would mean that children should be wearing masks forever now because of the flu. And they should get a vaccine mandatorily, as the government says, because of the flu. It's just all a load of crap. It's just all virtue signaling, grandstanding, pandering to their audience, the left-wing audience, in order to draw more appeal and more clout. So at least a dozen Republican governors have already criticized the mandate as an overreach by President Joe Biden, and many have vowed to file a lawsuit against the requirements once the Biden administration puts it into effect. See, so this is going to be me debunking this entire thing. So constitutionally, there is no precedent to go through the executive branch and do any of this. The executive branch does not hold this authority. Executive's job is to enforce the laws. The laws are supposed to be laid out by the legislative authority, the legislative branch. Now, in the legislative branch, in the Constitution, what their procedures are and the power that they hold, I don't even think that they have the power to legislate this. But what Joe Biden's doing is he's using executive fiat through the executive order powers, which is just a load of crap, pretty much just fabricated, because powers that are laid out in the Constitution to the legislative authority, they're non-delegable, is the first thing. And the second thing is, if you wanted to even delegate them, it would require an amendment to the Constitution, because now you're saying the sole purpose, the job, something that is specifically exclusive of the legislative branch is now going to be the job of the executive branch. So if you want to go forward with doing things like this to begin with, it would even need a constitutional amendment. That would be the only way, I think, that they would be able to push these type of powers onto the executive. But fundamentally, if you start doing things like that, then you no longer have a republic. So you fundamentally change the components and the type of government in which you have. So really, at that point, I would say it's not even doable. I mean, delegating the legislative power to say, we no longer make laws, we'll just pass it all off to the executive. I don't even think that's actually possible to do in a constitutional republic, because then at that point, you might as well just disband the entire system, and you guys have to vote on a whole new constitution, because that's such a fundamental change. That would be like saying that the legislative branch is now also the judicial branch. They just completely abolish the judicial. It's like abolishing all of the power of one branch and just giving it to another. You now fundamentally have changed the Constitution to a point where it's no longer even, this isn't even like a legitimate document anymore. So to begin with, I don't think they even have the power to do that in the legislative branch, let alone in the executive branch, where there is no power laid out or justified in trying to push through vaccine mandates through the Department of Labor and through OSHA. So this isn't going to work. This is just another way, I think, of shifting the narrative off of Afghanistan and the failings of the Biden administration, because their numbers have been solid on some of this COVID stuff. So each person, each violation that they get in the employer, and I've been hearing this as well, you have the option. If you're an employer with over 100 employees, you either administer tests to people that have not been vaccinated or the people get vaccinated. I heard that it's very difficult to get tests right now. You can't find tests. So then what are you going to do? You pretty much are forced by government tyranny, by the monopoly on force that comes from the government, to vaccinate your employees. That's pretty much what this executive order is saying. Now, should it be followed? No, I don't think anybody should follow this. I wouldn't follow this if I had a large company. I know the Daily Wire isn't. And for each violation that you don't cover, each violation, so let's say, I didn't get tested this week, and that's $14,000. If I don't get tested next week, that's another violation. That's another $14,000. So people can't eat that cost. It's just not going to work out. Big corporations, they just can't eat it. And if you wanted to do this, wouldn't you think it would be, and I'm just saying practically, smaller businesses, generally, people are much more in close proximity to each other, whereas with the larger companies, you have a bigger work environment, workspace, where employees are more divided, and there's much more distance between all of them. So if you wanted to implement something that actually made sense and tried to stop the spread of COVID by your own rules, what your mannerisms of social distancing are, then wouldn't you go forward with implementing it with the small businesses as well? And I'm not saying I'm not in favor of anything, but it just shows that as we continue to do this thing, it's all just a power push. It's a power play by the government. It's whichever one also is the path of least resistance, because they know that companies like Amazon, because Amazon collaborates with the government to pass legislation and they lobby, they know they're going to go through with this. They know Amazon's of the world, let's say the Facebooks, the Twitters, like those kind of companies that shell for the government and pretty much are the government, they're going to go forward with this stuff. So they know that that's the path of least resistance, and they also don't want to look like total totalitarian tyrants. Like, this is very calculated. If they did this to small industry, there would be not a huge uproar, but it would look, for the Democrat base, the Democrat voter, it would make the government look much more like tyrants and much more like assholes that don't care about people, which we already know on the right wing side. We know the government in general sense really doesn't care about any of us. We just try to mitigate them as much as we can. So Thomas Massey, who is the House of Rep member, I don't remember which state. He's got like right wing. I think he's kind of libertarian. So this is a One America News piece. If you want to check it out, everything that I refer to will be in the show notes below. Now this is great. He finds the web archives of everything on the CDC and their classification of what a vaccination, like what their definition of what a vaccination is, has changed over the last year or so. They changed purposely with collaboration from the federal government to try to enforce vaccine mandates, making it as if a vaccine is not 100% safe. It's not 100% effective, but it somewhat provides a little extra protection, kind of like a mask is the way the government's trying to kind of, they're trying to treat vaccines like a mask. Oh, you wear it yourself to protect others, not only to protect yourself. They're making it like that with vaccines right now. They're making it like the vaccine is not the end-all, be-all fix. Like, it doesn't have some sort of a 95% effectiveness rate. So they want everyone to be vaccinated because even if you're vaxxed, you could still get it. There's still breakthrough cases that are more mild, apparently, and don't yield the same negative results, different magnitudes. So the vaccination pre-2015, this is how they defined it: injection of a killed or weakened infectious organism in order to prevent the disease. That was pre-2015. Then vaccination from 2015 to 2021. The act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce immunity to a specific disease. So then here is September 2021. So this is just recently. A vaccination to them now is defined as the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce protection from a specific disease. So now they're treating vaccination as if it is not an immunity. They're treating it now as it is a protection. And I was just watching a clip of Fauci, and he still can't answer this, and he knows what the answer is. He just will not answer it because it doesn't look good for the regime that's behind him. They ask him, Dr. Fauci, what do you think of natural immunity? Because natural immunity has always been the premium, the prime. It's better than getting a shot. It has always been better than the vaccine. It has always yielded much more positive results in terms of immunity response. It always has because it's natural. It's the most natural way. I mean, it's pretty simple. When it comes to dieting, you try to eat the most natural organic foods that you can comparatively to the processed crap. So a vaccine is the processed crap. The actual having it and having a real immune response and building up an immunity to it, that is the organic food. So if Dr. Fauci doesn't have an answer, oh, I don't know, it could be better. I don't really know. He knows that the immune system response, a natural immunity response, is much better than having any vaccine. So this is what the problem is with the government. It's the one size fits all idea. If you've already had vaccine, why is it that your blood isn't getting checked for samples of antibodies against COVID-19? Why is it that you now have to bend the knee and get a vaccine after you've already had it? I mean, I have a bunch of people in my family that have already had COVID-19 and they had to go get the vaccine because of their employer. That's how this works right now. I mean, me personally, I'm not doing it. Whether my employer requires it or not, I will get laid off, I will get fired, and then hopefully one of you listeners at home, you guys can hook me up with a job or something and shoot me an email. And the email will be also in the description below. It's thefederalistfiles@gmail.com, because I'm not kidding. I'm being serious. So yeah, I got Leanna Wen. She's back on CNN. Now she's talking about implementing some of these COVID vaccines for children in schools. And I have a very interesting article that you wrote last year after this. Play clip six.
I don't think it goes far enough. I actually think that what Zeke said about interstate travel was exactly right. But in this case, we have childhood immunizations that we don't even think about. All 50 states have laws on the books to require routine childhood immunizations, which we really should be looking at the COVID vaccine the same way. And when it comes to employers, I think what the Biden administration did was quite brilliant because it gives air cover for businesses that have wanted to do this, that have wanted to put vaccine mandates in place. But they didn't want to have their employees complain about them. Now they can say, hey, we didn't really want to do this, but the administration, the federal government is making us do it. It also helps to level the playing field so that people aren't then going to threaten to go to another workplace. If every workplace has that same requirement, that's a good thing. So I don't think it's overreach. I think this is what's needed in the middle of a pandemic. And in fact, I think the Biden administration, if anything, could have gone even further.
Let's see what happens next. Dr. Zeke, Matt.
Oh man, so that's a lot to unpack, unravel there. Yeah, she talks about kids, immunizations. I kind of debunked that earlier. Now she goes on to go with the Biden talking point. The Biden administration talking point is a lot of these employers, we helped empower employers because they want to implement some sort of COVID vaccine mandate in their workplace, but they didn't have the power to do so. So we pretty much covered for them the liability. We made them have to do it so they can turn around and blame the government on this. And then she goes, I don't see this, how this is overstepping. Oh, and the best one to me, more than anything, my favorite thing that she has to say is this changes the playing field. So now if your employer requires this, you can't go and work somewhere else because other employers required as well. You know, this evens the playing field, and I don't see how this is a constitutional or how this is an infringement on any type of rights. Well, that's now opposite. We are no longer working. I mean, we haven't been working under a free market in a very long time now, but now you're no longer working in a a free market, because you can't have people can't rightly pick up and leave. There's no mobilization. You can't pick up and leave your job, because it's not like you could say, oh, well, the grass is greener on the other side. I can avoid government tyranny. I can avoid tyranny by my employer. No, you can't do any of that, because now it's a straight across the board vaccine mandate. And she's happy about that. She thinks it's not overbearing. And really, I think she's a total plant. I do. And this isn't me being like conspiratorial here. I do. I don't know who planted her, but I think she's a plant, whether it's the administration's paying her, the DNC, whether it's the Chinese Communist Party. I don't know who it is, because the Chinese Communist Party pretty much pays the DNC anyway. The Baltimore Sun, she wrote this article, and this is great. January 30th, she wrote it, of 2020, though. So this is while COVID was kind of coming out. She wrote an article about, and she's pointing to, how the flu is actually more deadly than COVID. The flu is much more to be worried about than COVID. She writes in the Baltimore Sun last year, she writes, so you're telling me a person now that thinks it's totally legitimate to mandate vaccine across the country. You can't fly, you can't you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything, implemented for children as well. And that's not considered unconstitutional because you don't have any rights. That same person that's worried that much about COVID said a year ago, or a year and a half ago, really, that COVID is less deadly than the flu, and the flu is the real thing to be worried about. And she pointed, and she said it was something like less than 40% of people are vaccinated against the flu, and because of that, there's a lot of issues. Flu's been around forever, very deadly, deadlier for younger people. And then she was pointing out the death rate, 65,000 people die a year, something like that, she was saying, as a response to the flu. So yeah, I just think that she's a plant. I don't know who planted her. I think she's a plant, though. I just think she's so full of crap, and it shows. I'm very interested that Chris Cuomo, and that's why I played the very end. I let Chris Cuomo kind of talk a little bit, and it amazes me that these people come on CNN, and there's no pushback at all from the host, from Chris Cuomo. Like Chris Cuomo, I didn't always see as like a super far left wing guy. Now I'm seeing him as just really whatever gets him paid is what he does now. Whether it's him faking having COVID and then going outside and saying that he was in his basement where he really wasn't, and then admitted that he was out of his basement and all this crap. I think none of it is true. I just think he wants the money. I think that's the only reason he's there. Now, Don Lemon, on the other hand, I think, yeah, he's a super far leftist progressive. But Chris Cuomo, I don't think is as far left as people think he is. I think he just goes on that show and he does whatever his masters at CNN tell him to. He's a shill for the money. I mean, millions of dollars a year, why wouldn't you? And they're probably the least talented people for what they get paid in the entire country. They're the least talented. At the very minimal requirement of talent is either being an affirmative action hire, whether you're gay, black, whatever, or you are just like, you just shill. You do the Brian Stelter and you say whatever they want you to, and they pay you out big bucks. So U.S. government, and this is why I said we're trying to shift this away from Afghanistan. I wanted to get in Afghanistan a little bit, and then I got some of this Mark Milley story, the general from the military in bed with China. U.S. government funding the Taliban with $64 million. This is a post-millennial piece. It's tremendous. So what we have is, according to government release funding from the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is USAID, and the Department of State will flow through independent organizations such as United Nations agencies and NGOs, and they will be, and I'm quoting here, providing life-saving support directly to Afghans facing the compounding effects of insecurity, conflict, recurring natural disasters, and COVID-19 pandemic. For assistance to be effective, we will need an environment conducive to the principled delivery of aid, including the ability for both female and male aid workers to operate freely, the press release reads. So the U.S. government will be giving $64 million to quote-unquote NGOs over in and United Nations agencies over in Afghanistan. So this is just a payoff to the Taliban, because all of this money will be embezzled and laundered through these NGOs and go to the Taliban. You're trying to tell me the Taliban isn't going to strong arm people for $64 million in Afghanistan? That's exactly what's going to go on. A lot of these NGOs are connected to the Taliban in some way. The Taliban now is the centralized government there. So really any money that's going to an NGO is just going to be going to the Taliban. And that's $64 million from the United States. And then they're talking about how the world's going to contribute $1.1 billion. including $606 million coming from the UN, which I'm sure we pay a pretty big chunk in the UN payment as well. So that's always great to hear. So I got Tony Blinken here. I don't remember what the name of the representative that's asking him questions. Lee Zeldin, in particular. And he asks him about how many people exactly are stranded right now, still in Afghanistan. How many people are we trying to get out of there as we speak? Play clip 8.
Mr. Secretary, it would be good, though, if you were giving answers that were consistent with the answers that we were getting behind a closed-door briefing that we had with you and others. What is the number of Americans who are in Afghanistan as of the last update you received?
The Congressman, going back to this weekend, we had about 100 American citizens in contact with us who seek to leave Afghanistan. Those are the Americans we're working with.
Do you have an exact number?
I can't give you an exact number. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. It's really a snapshot at any given moment, because what happens is...
I asked you as of the last update you received.
Yeah, as of the last update, it was about 100.
Okay, how many green card holders?
Green card holders is something that we don't track directly. So what we've done is we've solicited people, if they are green card holders, to let us know. I think the best estimates are that there's several thousand green card holders in Afghanistan.
So just remember, he says about 100. So that's about 100 people that have been able to reach out to the State Department. That's not even how many really want to get out of there. And then he said you had about 1,000 green card holders as well that are stuck in Afghanistan. So it's pretty much a complete disaster. Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, has no clue what's going on. They got another one from him. Rand Paul, I think he's on the Senate floor. They're doing some sort of investigation. Oh yeah, here's another thing I want to. They shut down that Chipman guy, the ATF, the director of the ATF. They decided to pull his nomination because he's just so many conflicting stories. He was involved in Waco as well. But yeah, sorry, I want to get back to this now. Senate with the Senate floor. You got Rand Paul questioning him, specifically asking about that scenario we mentioned. Last weekend's show, the Hellfire missile strike that killed 10 innocents in Afghanistan, including 7 children, and the person that they were aiming for, the person that they were investigating, they had some sort of special intelligence on the ground that it was an ISIS-K member. He was a U.S. aid worker, so he's helping out the U.S. He was walking around. Apparently, there's video. I've yet to see it. He's walking around with giant jugs of water. That I guess they said was some sort of explosive device. So you got Rand Paul questioning him on that. Play clip 2.
The guy the Biden administration droned, was he an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative?
The administration is, of course, reviewing that strike. And I'm sure that a full assessment will be forthcoming.
So you don't know if it was an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative?
I can't speak to that, and I can't speak to that in this setting in any event.
So you don't know or won't tell us?
I don't know, because we're reviewing it.
Well, see, you'd think you'd kind of know before you off somebody with a Predator drone whether he's an aid worker or he's an ISIS-K.
So now we're looking at, and folks, can you imagine if this was a... If this was a Trump or even just a Republican in general, could you imagine if it was a Trump administration attacking and killing on failed intelligence? And to be honest with you, I don't really even know. Like, how good can your intelligence be when you pulled everybody out of the country? How good can your intelligence be that you know who the ISIS-K people are? Like, let's be honest here. How do you know that? What is there, some sort of I mean, what is there? What surveillance is there to verify that these were the two, that this was an ISIS-K member that was getting ready to bomb another thing, that you were able to attack it? You pulled everybody out. There's no intelligence. There's your whatever intelligence you got, it would never be that fast. It would never be a day or 2 days later you would have intelligence to blow up the next ISIS-K. Apparently, they killed the two ISIS-K members that were responsible in planning the attack to begin with. No one really knows. That has not been validated either. And now in this one, they go and attack who they think and who they say is the next bomber. Meanwhile, when the New York Times does their report in investigative journalism for once, they find that it's 10 innocents, 7 of them being children. And then when you ask the Secretary of State about it, the Secretary of State has nothing to say. Oh, we're still investigating. We really don't know. So wouldn't it have been smart for you guys to check out and verify your sources and verify that this is an ISIS-K member before just firing off Hellfire missiles? Because at this point, what's the point? But you needed a prompt action because it looks good. Optically, it looks good politically for you. It looks good in poll numbers. So that's what you go ahead. You go ahead and pop off some Hellfire missiles, not knowing who you're even shooting at this point because of quote unquote intelligence. Because, you know, the intelligence agencies have never failed us, like WMDs over in the Middle East. That they've never failed us in that regard either. So they go ahead, they do that. And now this like isn't even a story. This isn't a story because guess what? COVID vaccine mandates and the 9/11 weekend comes up as well. So this just isn't a story. No one's going to report this. Like the mainstream, like the left-wing legacy media class, they're not going to talk about any of this right now, what's going on. If this is verified, this is pretty much just a war crime at this point. This is just a war crime because you guys probably, you can't tell me that you were able to verify this. Whatever your rules of engagement are, your ROEs, there's no way that you follow them in this case. So I want to get to speaking of military operations. You got General Milley. It's pretty much him pledging his allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party. This is hilarious. He pledged himself to warn Chinese government officials if the U.S. was going to take military action against them. And this was during the Trump administration. You could tell now from this article, when you read some of these quotes coming out of General Milley from reports, he is a far left activist. That's what he does. He's a progressive. I would say even he's probably a communist activist. National Pulse, they do terrific work on this piece. It's written by Raheem Kassam and Natalie Winter, so it's like they're two A-list writers. General Milley, who controversially defended teaching Marxist critical race theory in the military, telephoned his Chinese Communist Party counterpart, General Li Zusheng, who's the general over in China, twice in the final months of the Trump administration. Now, Milley's calls, according to Bob Woodward and Robert Costas's new book, Peril, were aimed at restricting the president of the United States' ability to wage kinetic war against China. Stunningly, Milley even secretly pledged to inform Beijing ahead of any potential U.S. military action. End quote. This is pretty crazy. If this turns out to be true, I mean, this is borderline. This is obviously dishonorable discharge, but this is borderline criminal behavior that you're calling up. You're saying, oh, I'm just not going to listen to whatever the president's going to do, commander in chief. I'm not going to listen to whatever his orders are, no matter what they are. And if it's an attack on China, I'm going to call and let the Chinese government know. Then what is that really? Like, I mean, at that point, is it conspiracy to commit treason? I mean, what is it? Because you're planning treason, obviously, right? If that's to be taken seriously, what you said on the phone call, then that means that you're planning to commit treason. So if I had to imagine, it'd probably be conspiracy to commit treason because you're now aiding and abetting American enemies. And not only American enemies, like international enemies, pretty much enemies of everybody. So on the first call on October 30th, 2020, just 4 days before the U.S. election, Milley assured his Chinese Communist Party friends that the U.S. would not attack China. He stated, and I quote, "General Li, I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything is going to be okay. We are not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you." End quote. So why in the hell would, and if the best part about the Trump presidency was, from the commander-in-chief position, is everybody was afraid of him because he was considered unpredictable. So why would you create a predictable situation with your biggest adversary internationally? Why would you do that as a general of the military and a top-ranking general in the military as well? So he goes on. This is actually even worse here. This is the Washington Post noting this. He stated, and I quote, "General Li, you and I have known each other for now 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise." So, he added, I mean, I don't know how else to illustrate how treasonous this is. I mean, I don't know what else. There's no other words I could really use to clarify at this point. He's telling him, if there's an attack, I've known you for 5 years, which really isn't a long time to actually know somebody, especially an adversary of one of your biggest international enemies in the entire world. 5 years to know somebody. Oh, I know you for 5 years. If we were going to attack you, I would let you know that we're going to attack you. Why would you do that tactically it's insane. It doesn't make any sense unless if you are in bed with the Chinese Communist Party. So the second call between the two generals, of which Milley did not inform Trump, took place on January 8th, 2021. So he's going behind the president's back to call up the Chinese Communist Party. It's amazing. And this is supposed to be a top-ranking military official in our government, very top-ranking. So he stated, and I quote, things may look unsteady, and he's talking to Lee, General Lee, but that's the nature of democracy, General Lee. We are 100% steady. Everything's fine, but democracy can be sloppy sometimes. Now, that's what he said, end quote. Now, in response, General Lee suggested that the Chinese Communist Party felt the United States government was unstable during the hour and a half phone call. So now, for me, when I look at that one to me is nowhere near as bad as the other call. Now, him going behind President Trump's back, I think, is a problem. It shows some sort of infidelity, obviously, that he's going behind his back to call Chinese government officials, Chinese generals up. I think it's very weird, their relationship that they had. To me, it just looks like the dude was a plant. And he's a commie, obviously. So Milley, he believed that Trump would attempt to create a crisis in an effort to seize power. And this is great. So he's talking about the insurrection on 1-6. And there was also another part that I don't know. Here it is. It's the Nancy Pelosi thing. So he believed that he's going to try to create some sort of seizure of power, and then compares Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. You can't even make this stuff up. So he stated, and I quote, similar to Hitler's exploitation in 1933 of an arson fire at the German Reichstag to help institute emergency powers, according to the Washington Post. So we have General Milley, who directly reports to the commander-in-chief, and here's the thing. This is actually my biggest problem with this. I don't have a problem with the dissenting opinion to who the president, the commander-in-chief is, but here's the thing. If you don't agree with what's going on in the military like that, to that extent, where you're willing to go aid and abet all of our foreign adversaries, you're willing to do that, you might as well just step down from your position. Don't continue to hold the position. If you disagree with what the administration's doing, don't continue to act with the administration and try to undermine them. Just quit. Just retire. That's what somebody with any sense of pride and dignity, that's what they would do, instead of trying to undermine the current administration in power. So, and I'm not saying that you have to sit there and listen to every single edict that comes out of the mouth of the leader, but I just don't know militarily where you could sit there and point and be like, yeah, man, I'll just go hop in bed with China. That's a good idea. Some of the biggest human rights violators in the entire world who put Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps and make them manufacture iPhones at zero price, of course. So in reality, it was the anti-Trump establishment that turned a small fracas at the Capitol on January 6th into a full-blown insurrection, a framing which an increasing number of Americans now reject. To address these unfounded fears, Milley spoke to Nancy Pelosi, informing her that he would prohibit Trump from using any kind of military force. So now he's going behind the president's back. He's saying, I'm going to prohibit. I'm telling Nancy Pelosi, who's the Democrat, of course, the strongest Democrat at that time, I'm going to prohibit him from doing anything with my grand power as general of the military. I mean, this is some, I'm telling you, man, this is some super third world country, banana republic like shit that's going on here right now. And yeah, I actually want to mention this 1-6 thing. So what we had was we had September 11th over the weekend. We had George Bush, who was really responsible for the Iraq War, maybe not all 20 years of it, but the very start of it, and what, maybe 8 years of it under his administration, or 7 years of it. He decided to go on and, you know, cowtail to the left wing and act supporting of the left wing, because he's essentially afraid of the media apparatus coming after him like they've done for the last 20 years. So at this point, you might as well just double down. But of course, here's another spineless coward that's not going to double down because he loves the establishment. He still wants to be invited to these weird parties that politicians have. Who knows what goes on? So he went on. He decided to go on and make a speech on 9/11, how we shouldn't be Islamophobic and how we should think much more about the domestic terrorists that are in our country, in our midst, rather than these foreign terrorists that brought down two of the biggest buildings in the country, killing more than 3,000 people, So instead, we should be looking out for. And then I think he also mentioned a little bit like, you know, January 6th as well. Because equating January 6th, where not one government official was killed, you had I think three people died. Two of them died from some sort of cardiac arrest, and the other one was shot by an officer. And so three people died. Two of them pretty much unprovoked. That's just natural occurrences. It's going to happen in the heat of the moment. Can't really do much to prevent that other than just don't show up to the rally or the protest, if you will, or the, whatever you want to call it, the riot. And then you have one that was a preventable death, a shooting, an unjustified shooting of a 5-foot-tall woman. And that's comparable somehow to 9/11. So that's what's going on right now in the government. It's so obvious at this point that the government does not have any, the establishment government, they do not have your best, they don't have the best intentions, and they don't care about you. If you like freedom, if you like liberty, they look at you and they deem you as a domestic terrorist, domestic extremist. If you don't believe in the election, if you don't believe that the election was fair, you are a domestic extremist. If you don't believe that the COVID vaccine is effective or necessary because you have an immune system, you are a domestic terrorist. They're codifying people that like liberty and freedom as criminals and terrorists. That's what's going on right now. I have always pretty much towed the line of lawful as a citizen myself. The government has made me into a criminal. I am a criminal by the what the government says, the national directive of national security. I am considered a domestic terrorist, as I'm sure many of you that are listening and watching as well are. So the report from Peril, and this is that book that Bobby Woodward just came out with, or he's coming out with soon, also reveals that Milley's partisan deference to Joe Biden over the Afghanistan withdrawal, a series of decisions that led directly to the deaths of American servicemen, 13 of them, Afghan civilians as well, I think something like 100 of them, and the continued abandonment of hundreds of Americans in the country. So this is what Milley had to say about Joe Biden deciding to pull all the military out before the people out of Afghanistan. He said, and I quote, "You're dealing with a seasoned politician here who has been in Washington, D.C. 50 years, whatever it is." So yeah, don't worry, man. It's a seasoned politician because, you know, our political class have been so successful over the last 50 years, and he's been doing it for 50 years. So that makes sense. That's fine. So yeah, there's no brass on the table there. Nobody put their brass down and actually stood up with a little bit of conviction. Everybody decided to do the yes man thing because that's what the establishment wanted, the establishment class. It's just it's really outrageous. So Nicki Minaj had this beef with Joy Reid. It's pretty stupid, pretty funny, post-millennial piece. I'm not going to go that deep into it. She said something like, I think her sister's husband or her sister's boyfriend, he got a shot. His testicles got really like bloated. He's infertile now. So she's going to watch out. She's going to do her studies and she doesn't want people to take it. But she said something like, you know, wear a mask, take it if you want to. I mean, she didn't really say anything that was that aggressive at all. She just went away from the status quo. She almost did like kind of, actually less than what a Joe Rogan was. So then Joy Reid had to go on her show and attack her over it and keep calling her sister and try to, you know, use the black thing to make it like they had some sort of connection. And then Nicki Minaj completely rejected her and repudiated her and just went back and forth and just attacked her pretty much, which is good on her because Joy Reid was making it like, and this is weird where they're like, you have such an impact on society. So it's your role to bow down to the government and bend the knee so others will also bend the knee. That's really what the ideology was. That's what Joy Reid's, the point she was trying to make. And Nicki Minaj just completely rejected it and just trashed her. And that was really it on that. And then others were in support. Or who's her name? Meghan McCain. Fucking joke. I hate the McCain family. I hate them so much. Meghan McCain was saying something to Nicki Minaj like, oh, well, your fans, you shouldn't be telling them not to take the vaccine and all this crap. Because really, at this point, the McCains are just Democrats. That's all they are. Simply put, they're not Republicans. They're Democrats. They say they're Republicans. They say they're conservatives. They're just Democrats. It's just the way it is. And then Candace Owens just wrecked, just totally wrecks Meghan McCain. It says something like, no one even cares about you. The only reason that you're important or relevant is because of your daddy, like in quotes, which is freaking hilarious. So, so what I got next is, and the reason this whole thing came up is because she was supposed to be going to the Met Gala, which is just another one of these stupid ceremonies where all these celebrities pat themselves on the back and wear really, really expensive, skin tight or non-existent clothing, like dresses and shit. So I have this. Dave Portnoy actually posted this. It's a picture of AOC. I've seen some pictures and videos. She has a dress that says Tax the Rich. I believe the dress was something like $1,000. She's going to a Met Gala that a ticket costs $30,000. And she's making it like she's part of the working class with her $180,000 salary every single year. And then remember, when she's out of the government, I believe she also gets a pension program with that as well. So Dave Portnoy, he said, tax the rich, but first I'm gonna go have the time of my life partying with them all at the most extravagant, over-the-top party of the year that is essentially a celebration of richness, which he's 100% right. Dave Portnoy is much more of a working-class guy. He's super rich, but he's a normal working-class blue-collar guy because that's his background. AOC went to the elitist institutions her entire life. Racked up the debt. She lived in very, very rich areas of the, she keeps saying the Bronx, but she's not from the Bronx. She's from like a super rich area. She went to a ritzy high school, probably a majority white high school. She's always been like of that upper class. You could just tell when she talks, you go, oh, this is like the rich liberal chick that tries to act like she's ghetto, like she's from the hood and she has some sort of street cred. Like she has some reputation or something. So yeah, the person that has the tax the rich dress on is the rich, essentially, and works with the and collaborates with the rich, but acts like they don't. It's just a big trick. The whole thing is just it's almost so sad. It's like humiliating. It's almost like humiliating how ironic everything is. And it's so obvious, but it becomes humiliation because it's like they're playing a giant joke on all of us. Because we all know that everyone that's on the right wing knows that this is an entire joke. And everybody else that's non-political, apolitical, or on the left wing actually eats this shit up. They believe this. It's clownery. It's clown world that we're living in right now. So I have some of this economic stuff I want to hit real quick. So we got inflation rates are at 5.3%. And I believe that's the consumer price index. It's written by Zachary Halashak. It's a Washington Examiner piece. So consumer prices increased 5.3% in the year ending in July, according to a report released on Tuesday by the Department of Labor. The numbers from the Consumer Price Index came in line with forecast expectations and raised concerns that inflation is coming in too hot as the country continues its recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. So yeah, they weren't expecting. Well, they kept saying inflation's transitory, it's not going to last. Meanwhile, we've seen inflation just skyrocket. I think before it was like, I want to say it was around 2.4. When I first started reporting on Consumer Price Index, it was something like 2.4%. Now we're looking at 5.3% over the year over Consumer Price Index inflation. So yeah, it's just going to continue as you have no workers in the workplace. You're looking at worker shortages and everyone's living off the government paycheck. I'm thinking, I believe by the end of this month, if it has not already cut out, some of these unemployment benefits are going to run out, then people are going to have to go back to work. We can maybe look at things normalizing here, but as soon as the government tries to raise interest rates, we are screwed and the entire thing is going to crash. So it's definitely a disaster. I highly suggest people invest. Me personally, invest in Bitcoin. I'm not financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not telling you what to do. Whether it's gold, whatever, you need to hedge your bets against the U.S. dollar because the U.S. dollar is going to be inflating at a very dramatic rate. It's this modern monetary policy that they have, this idea of quantitative easing where you can just keep printing money and it doesn't make a difference and nothing negative is gonna come from it. I mean, it's literally a childish theory from some idiot. So inflation has been higher in recent months than the Federal Reserve and many economists anticipated earlier this year. The Consumer Price Index registered its highest year-over-year gains since 2008 in June and July when it clocked in at a whopping 5.4%. So now we're seeing Consumer Price Index numbers like the crash of 2008, the housing market bubble crisis, everything crashed. We're looking at numbers that are that bad. So that means that incoming, we're going to see some sort of economic crash here. I believe there's going to be a huge correction. I don't know if it's actually going to be in the market because the U.S. dollar is going to continue to inflate, which means people will look at anything to hedge against the U.S. dollar, whether it's an oil stock, whether it's gold, whether it's Bitcoin. Real estate is another one. Anything that is used where you can put your money into it and it's not going to be devalued by the government printing money, that's what will be utilized. So I don't exactly know if things like that will crash as hard as the U.S. dollar will. So the Federal Reserve has not tightened its monetary policy to dampen inflation, but has rather kept with the easy money policies it has maintained since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Fed officials have said that they don't intend to raise interest rates until inflation is running at 2% and the economy is at full employment. There are still millions of fewer people employed now than in February of last year when the unemployment rate was at 3.5%. So it's pretty bad. 2%, they're going to raise the interest rates. When that happens, we're going to see some pretty... What will happen is that the housing prices will drop, because if you raise the interest rates, people are less likely to go out and buy because they can't get really low interest loans. So they're going to go for cheaper houses. You're going to naturally have to... No one's going to be able to afford to buy a house. You're going to have to lower the prices. So that's where the housing bubble will pop eventually, I think. But I think this, me personally, I think this will happen around the end of 2022, 2023. That's my personal estimate when they'll feel that we're more stable. But that's just me. And it's amazing that... I don't know if I've ever had this talk with the audience here. I've had this talk with many other people. But the idea of having the Federal Reserve to begin with is unconstitutional, because it's a delegating of coining of the money, a job that is exclusively of the legislative body, the legislative branch, and just delegating it straight to the banks. And the banks are just printing money out, and it's pretty much arbitrarily, so they're printing money out. If we wanted to spend money and we wanted to print more money, we would have to pass legislation to do it. That's how it was traditionally made. To do that. So really, having the Federal Reserve is unconstitutional to begin with, because it wasn't a constitutional amendment that they passed to create the Federal Reserve. And it's a power that can't... Legislative authority, more than any, probably any power, you can't just delegate it and pass it out to other people. It's a serious problem. That's kind of why we're in the predicament that we have. And then we went off the gold standard about 50 years ago. That's a whole other issue, can of worms. So multi-trillion-dollar tax hike, Foundation of Economic Education article here. It's written by Brad Palumbo. So here's some of the proposed legislation to raise your taxes. And this is partially, I think, with a $3.5 trillion bill that I don't think will pass through, because Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are both against it. But they're definitely going to keep going with these tax hikes. They're going to need to pay for all of the spending here. It proposes raising the corporate tax rate from 21% to 26.5% and increasing the top income tax rate from 37% to 39.7%. The plan also adds a 3% tax surcharge on those making $5 million or more. So to begin with, I also was reading something about... In New York, this new tax proposal, if you're top of the income chart and you're living in New York, you will be paying 61.5% of your income to the government, combination state and federal government. In New Jersey specifically, I think they're like 56 or 57%. So really, you're going to be working your shift, and most of your shift, you will be taking the money and just handing it over to the government. So, it would change the estate. They're talking about the death tax on the estate. I went over that a couple shows ago. Additionally, they want to mess around with the capital gains tax rate. They want the rate to change from 20%. 20% on like long-term investments, anything that's over a year. They want to change that from 20 to 25%, which will kill, obviously. It'll kill 401k plans, IRAs. If you are somebody that has a pension still, it'll destroy that. It'll decimate that as well. And what everybody says is, oh, well, the tax rates, it's going to go up for the richer people. It's going up for the corporations. It's not going to affect me. That's incorrect, because when you go to buy something at Walmart and Walmart's getting taxed an extra, you know, let's say 10%, then there's either two people, there's two different parties that pay taxes. It's either the consumer or the corporation. Most of the time, corporation just takes that tax and they pass it right on to you, or actually their employees. So they'll pay the employees less and then they will also pass a tax on to you. It's very similar. The best comparison I can find is sales tax. Sales tax, generally speaking, is just a tax that's passed on. The government uses corporations or companies to collect taxation from you. That's essentially what happens. The business isn't really collecting that tax. Those tax dollars aren't going towards the business. It's just an extra charge that they're collecting for the government to hand over to the government. So that's kind of what this is. When you raise taxes on corporations, you're going to see less raises for people, smaller raises. And then also when you go to buy things out, goods, what have you, they're going to be more expensive because of the taxation. Because they can't, there's a fine line. There's only so much overhead that a corporation or a business can make money on, and they need to continue to bring in those gains. So when there's an increased taxation, it just gets passed on to the consumer or whatever to still be competitive, the consumer or the employee. So that'll conclude this one, folks. I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in, as always. Please like, share, subscribe, let people know about the podcast. I feel like this was a pretty good one today. I've been getting some pretty solid numbers, which is fantastic. Drop the mic, as in my name, Mike. Let people know about the podcast. I greatly appreciate it. I will see you folks all this weekend on the weekend special. Have a good week, and I will see you this weekend. Thank you.